Bitcoin futures start trading. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson in for David Brancaccio. The first ever Bitcoin futures began trading last night and saw big price swings in the first few minutes of trading. Price volatility has been a defining characteristic of the cryptocurrency. This weekend, the acting governor of New Zealand's central bank said Bitcoin looks remarkably like a bubble. Marketplace's Andy Euler tells us what futures trading means for the cryptocurrency and for investors.
So a Bitcoin future is, in theory, the same as any future contract for any other stock or currency. Futures allow you to buy or sell something at a specific price to be paid on a specific date. Basically, a bet that the return in the future is going to be in your favor. Even before futures trading, Bitcoin has been incredibly volatile, price swings of hundreds of percent. Now it could be even more so. I read a quote this morning from one investor who said, "It's rare that you see something more volatile than Bitcoin, but we found it in Bitcoin futures." As it sits right now, Bitcoin's just a virtual decentralized currency, not backed by any government or company. So the markets for Bitcoin are largely unregulated, partly because countries are still debating how to define it. Is it a currency? Is it a software? But that hasn't discouraged a lot of speculation in the less than a day Bitcoin futures have been trading.
Marketplace's Andy Euler, thanks. And now, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.5%. The Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.2 range, with the Dow future up 44 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is up just a hair at 2.37%. A big date on the economic calendar this week, the Fed's Open Market Committee meeting on Wednesday, and it's widely expected to raise interest rates again. An important factor in that decision landed on Friday with the November jobs report. It showed unemployment at a low 4.1% and middling wage growth, just 2.5% year over year. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Part of the Fed's mandate is to maximize employment. The latest job numbers show that's going fine, giving the Fed room to gradually raise interest rates. Putri Pasquale at investment firm PAMCO says the Fed needs to move rates higher because if a recession hit now,
they don't necessarily have a lot of room to reduce rates and boost economic activity.
The Fed also has a mandate to maintain price stability. Typically, prices go up when employers start raising wages as the job market gets tight. But so far, that hasn't happened, and Josh Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute says a Fed rate hike would be a mistake.
If they convince people that regardless of wage and price inflation, they're just going to get on a steady treadmill of rate hikes, that's going to change plans on investment and taking on debt to buy big-ticket consumption items.
A cutback in business and consumer spending, he says, would choke off economic growth prematurely. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
As a nonprofit organization, Marketplace is on a mission that drives what we do every day, to increase economic intelligence across the country. We believe it's important work, which we're already doing, and right now would be a great time for you to help. When you donate to support Marketplace today, your gift will be matched dollar for dollar by our friends at the Candida Fund. Listeners like you who give to Marketplace do more than help keep the show on the air. You help us grow and get better. It's a way to directly support independent reporting and journalism you can trust, and the payoff comes with what you hear every day. Don't miss out on this chance to make your donation go twice as far. Give today at marketplace.org, and thank you.
More than 190,000 people have left Puerto Rico for Florida since Hurricane Maria hit. Many are 20-somethings who have landed in Central Florida with their eyes on better educational opportunities and jobs. Marketplace's Renata Sego spent time with one of those evacuees.
Nicole Morales paces out of a huge factory building in Orlando with her lunch bag. She arrives at sunrise to test internet routers with thousands of other workers, including her uncle, who got her the job. She's got a second gig across town, selling retail at the outlet mall. It's hectic, it's hard, but she's grateful.
When I got here, I was 3 weeks without a job, so I was going crazy.
She carpools with relatives for roughly 2 hours a day.
We're working on, you know, getting me a car for the end of the month because you have to have a car here. You can't get anywhere without cars.
Morales, who's 21, had been studying at the University of Puerto Rico and working two jobs when Hurricane Maria hit. Like millions of other Puerto Ricans, she waited for relief in the weeks after. Then she found out the university wouldn't open for another year.
You know, I decided that I had to leave because education is really important to me. I really want to be a professional. I really want to work. You know, I want to be someone.
The choice was hard. Morales, an only child, didn't want to leave her mother, who's vowed to stay in Puerto Rico. But her uncle, grandmother, and dad were already in Florida. She could just join them in Kissimmee. So many Puerto Ricans have moved there, the town's been nicknamed Bayamón, after the busy city on the island. Her family took her into their quiet neighborhood. Quiet except for their dog. Her father, Gary's been wanting her to move for a while.
I'm very grateful that she's here. She's going to have a lot of opportunity that here in the United States, she's not going to have the same opportunity in Puerto Rico.
Those opportunities aren't automatic. Maria evacuees like Morales have been granted in-state tuition for Florida universities, but they have to apply first and meet credit and language requirements. Morales taught herself English growing up, and she feels lucky to be one of about 300 students admitted to the University of Central Florida so far. She'll continue her bachelor's degree there in January.
I was forced because of the hurricane to come here, but it was already a plan of mine to come here. So I'm very grateful. Maybe, you know, it's a blessing too that happened.
Her dream? To become an occupational therapist on the mainland. In Orlando, I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
And finally, Saudi Arabia announced today it'll allow movie theaters to open, something not permitted in the conservative kingdom in over three decades. Theaters were shut down due to pressure from religious authorities in the 1980s. The reversal is part of a push to diversify Saudi's economy, which is so heavily reliant on oil. It also follows other social openings, such as allowing concerts and letting women to drive. The first theaters are expected to open in March of next year, but no word yet on whether Hollywood movies will make the cut. In New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.